All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone, to the joint presentation with the Rehabilitation Task Force Committee. You're with the CCLVI, and this is a session on structured discovery. Why? Or why not? What have you. Anyway, we are pleased to be joined this afternoon by the chair of the Rehab Task Force, who is going to run this show, Doug Powell. He is going to provide some background information on structured discovery, what it is, how it became to be, and so on and so forth. Mark Bulger from Omaha, Nebraska, his first national convention, folks, by the way, is... There you go. Yeah, give him a hand for it. All right. He is going to be talking about structured discovery from a consumer standpoint, i.e. how to advocate for the service delivery back home that you think you should be getting if you're not getting it. And Michael Byington is no stranger to ACB. This is not his first national convention. He is a certified O&M instructor from, I believe, what, Texas Tech University?
That's where I got my training.
Yeah. That's where you got his training, yes. Okay, and he will be talking about structured discovery from a service delivery standpoint. So with that, folks, I will again welcome everyone here, and I will turn it over to Doug, who will moderate the rest of the session. Doug?
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome, and as we were supposed to have a wireless mic, and we always like to introduce everybody who's in the room, so I'm going to start. We're also being streamed live on ACB Radio, so we don't want to start late and wait for the wireless mic. But I think I'll start my comments, and then somewhere along the line, I would like to hear who is in the room, and I think you would like to also. So, okay, very good. So why don't we do that first? Terry Lynn Pomeroy, and what, as well as your name, what connection do you have to the rehabilitation world?
Or why are you here?
Why are you here? Yeah.
Well, because my connection is mostly consumer, although I have most of a master's degree in VR, but I haven't actually worked in VR. However, I'm very interested in the structured discovery craze was what brought me here because. Our center has basically become NMB, and they brag about structured discovery, but I've heard complaints about structured discovery, so I came to find out what the difference is.
Great. Thank you, Terry. So that's Terry Lynn Pomeroy, and she's a consumer and here to hear what this whole structured discovery is.
We don't have our wireless mic, because you say your name, and
then
you'll repeat it. Repeat what you said.
My name is Cynthia Cloud.
I'm from Iowa. Great, 35 years in the Structured Discovery Program.
I talk pain travel, braille, just, you know, a little bit of everything, camping, and, you know, a whole bunch. And I was part of that. I'm retired.
You don't look old enough to be retired.
She's retired, and Michael says she doesn't look old enough to be retired. Okay, another consumer.
My name is Maury
Hertziger. Maury
Hertziger.
Great. Curious about the structured discovery.
Are you repeating that?
I am.
Okay. And over here?
I'm Bianca Knight.
Bianca Knight.
And I am here
Great. If we could keep the explanations down a little bit so we have time to do structure discovery, right? No, it's not only you, but I thought I'd, you know. Yes. I heard that, yes, in the back. I was wondering what that was.
You didn't repeat Bianca's information into the mic yet.
You're right. Bianca is a CAP rep, a client assistance program attorney, and that's it, right. Okay, Chris from where?
New York,
and he has a hearing impairment as well as a visual impairment. So he's looking to see what methods are best for him to get the best rehabilitation. Okay, I'm sorry. Your name was
Jesse,
and you, okay. Thank you. Okay. Wow, that is. Okay, another visual and hearing impaired person. Okay, Jesse.
Okay, Jesse, did you repeat for her?
Sort of, yeah. I'm sorry, Diane?
Yeah.
here to find out what it's all about.
No, she knows what it's all about.
Oh, she does. Oh, I'm sorry.
She's fact-checking us.
Oh, she's fact-checking us. She's keeping us honest. Molly is an O&M instructor, okay?
And Julie Brown, O&M instructor.
And Julie Brown, O&M instructor.
And Charlotte Simpson, also O&M at Chris Cole.
Charlotte Simpson, O&M. Chris Cole. What your connection with the rehab system is. You're more, yeah.
I took rehab, I want to
Fred Schrager, he's CCLVI, low vision, yeah. Consumer. Tracy is a program manager with Oklahoma Blind Services. Melissa is a counselor in Oklahoma.
Doug Boone, Division Administrator, Visual Services, Oklahoma.
Doug is the blind administrator in Oklahoma.
Yes. Sarah Presley with the D.C. Department of Rehabilitation Services, or Rehabilitation Services Administration, and I'm a vocational rehab counselor.
Sarah is a vocational rehab counselor and a member of the Rehab Issues Task Force. Pauline, another O&M instructor. There you go.
I'm Shanika Kane. I work at Chris Cole Coalition.
Shamika, I'm sorry, what function?
Crisco.
Crisco. Residential. Okay, good. Julie is in Washington State. You said administration?
Program manager for the training center.
Okay.
So, I'm Lynn Blanchard. I'm the executive director of Affiliated Blind of Louisiana, a private nonprofit rehab center in Lafayette, South Louisiana.
That has one of the most inspired guys in the country in terms of teaching orientation and mobility to multiply disabled blind people, including blind folks in wheelchairs.
Okay. Len from Louisiana. Susan's a program director in Louisiana. Pearl is the executive director of the Nebraska Commission. And you are?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm Barbara Lombardi from Connecticut. I've been in the counseling field for a number of years. I work for a mental health center and always interested in what some of the newer methods in rehab.
And I'm Sarah Kimball, retired disability program manager, professional community service professional in the Department of
All right, Sarita, yeah. First, Barbara is a counselor, and Sarita,
retired
HR professional. Okay, good. Anybody else? Okay, good. Thank you very much, and welcome. What is structured discovery? Well, some people probably, especially in this organization, think that it was a made-up term by the National Federation of the Blind. That is not true, actually. The structured discovery goes back at least as far as Maria Montessori in Italy after World War II, when she started teaching kids of all economic backgrounds and setting up the environment so that their play would teach them how to learn when they got to school. So she set up the structure. She made it safe. She provided materials that were and provided a little bit of training on those materials. And the materials that she chose to put in that environment were the ones that children would find interesting to play with, but also would provide pre-reading and pre-learning, preschool cognitive development. So that's the kind of thing that structured discovery is. It's creating a safe environment, giving someone tools. But the interesting thing about the Montessori schools is that once you have been trained, once you've gotten a lesson on a set of materials, then you can go back to that any time. So it's kind of an informed choice kind of a thing of what you want to play with, and as long as that material is available, then you can go ahead and play with it. So that's one of the examples, earlier examples of structured discovery. So how does that translate to rehabilitation? It would be a good idea for Michael to talk about. Michael is a certified O&M specialist, and he's worked both. He's been trained both in this structured discovery and what some people call traditional rehabilitation techniques. And so maybe he can further the distinction between the two systems.
We're playing musical chairs up here because of the lack of a mic that we can pass back and forth at the table as well. Thank you very much, Doug. I'm not going to take a long time with this at this point, but picking up with Doug's explanation of how structured discovery came to be, it's often compared with what's called a pedagogical way of learning. With the pedagogical way of learning, you've got an instructor over the shoulder who is teaching step by step, where in structured discovery, obviously, if the materials are out there and the individual has more choice of what to play with or how to do it, they learn by discovering more of the concepts for themselves. Now, the way that has been converted, and certainly the National Federation of the Blind would tell you that they are responsible for this leap, and they certainly have contributed to it. The way that is adjusted now to blindness rehabilitation is to make the assumption that one of the tools that is necessary for structured discovery learning in a rehabilitation setting is that the individual will be under blindfold, and if there's any residual vision, that residual vision will be snuffed out during the training. Then, if the person chooses to use the residual vision when they have concluded the training, that tool is still there for them, but the emphasis is on learning blind skills. The emphasis is there because of several concepts. Number one, if your vision was giving you what you needed, you wouldn't be here in the first place. Number two, you can learn more confidence in your skills if you realize that the skills can be performed no matter how much vision you have left. It takes away from the person who goes into rehab as a low vision person and gets a set of skills, then loses more vision, and has to go back into rehab because those skills don't work anymore for them, and learn a different set of lower vision skills, and then ultimately perhaps has to learn blind skills someday. And the structured discovery advocates would tell you that that's really a waste of effort, time, life, money, etc., because here this person is coming back to rehab at three or four different times in their life because their vision has changed. The concept is if you get the blindness skills up front, then no matter what happens to your vision, you're going to be a well-performing, functional individual. And there has certainly been a lot of people who have proven that to be a very credible philosophy. The adding of the blindfold as a tool, however, was not an original part of structured discovery definition. That is something that the blindness rehabilitation biz has added. A third concept that is a very important one to understand, I think to those who are structured discovery advocates, they feel it is an essential situation to the setting. There are other people who find this to the most controversial concept, but the concept is that if you're going to learn appropriately under this type of structured discovery setting, then you need to be around other people who are going through the same thing, who are also under blindfold, whether they have any residual vision or not. Because you're not going to rehab to be a dancing bear or a circus performer. You can make mistakes comfortably. You can learn. You can discover. You can learn from your mistakes. And you can get the emotional support you need if you are with a number of individuals who are going through the same thing. The other side of the equation, however, and people call it the more traditional approach or the pedagogical approach. I've heard a number of names, and I don't really like any of them. People have asked ACB, since we have not entirely embraced structured discovery learning as the best way to do things for everyone out there. Well, if your philosophy isn't structured discovery, what is your philosophy? And some people have wrestled with that, but I tell people, and I think very accurately with the work of the Rehab Task Force here, and a wonderful white paper written a few years ago by Paul Edwards, establishing an ACB position on the subject, our philosophy is informed choice, that the individual who is blind or low vision should be able to decide and determine what type of rehabilitation works best for them. They should be able to say, I don't learn well as a discoverer. I've always done well with the pedagogical approach, and I want to do that. Or they may should be able to say, well, I know I could have to go back, but right now I want low vision rehabilitation. And as someone who is at the top end of legal blindness and who I'm told uses my vision very well, I can tell you that becoming rehabilitated to use low vision techniques and equipment is not something that just happens naturally any more than learning blindness techniques just happens on its own. Some approach has to be taken to help a person acquire some skills. And those skills of blindness are very, very useful. But developing low vision skills does not come all at once either. And the concept of those who have not fully embraced structured discovery is that there should be a cafeteria of opportunities available to the individual to choose different types of rehabilitation philosophies. Now, the conundrum that the field comes up to about offering choice is one of availability of services and what's available in a given area. I have worked at both, as Doug said, a structured discovery-based facility, which ultimately closed. That philosophy did not work out for them. Currently, I practice my work as a certified orientation and mobility specialist out of a low-vision clinic. I certainly have some people on my caseload who are totally blind, but quite frankly, the clinic doesn't know what to do with them besides refer them to me. So there are certainly gaps in what is offered outside of comprehensive structured discovery. But one thing that is offered is something that I like to refer to as informed choice, where we really sit down and discuss with the individual the pros and cons as I am discussing with it with you now. I believe that that's essential because I am a large, large advocate of consumer choice. But I certainly hope in trying to define the difference between the two styles of rehabilitation, which is what Doug asked me to do here, that you all can see, including those of you who are structured discovery practitioners, that I am by no means lambasting or rejecting structured discovery as a legitimate model that has value. It most certainly does. The issue becomes if you, say, for example, live in Nebraska, the only residential rehabilitation facility that is available in Nebraska is structured discovery only. If you live in Texas and your VR counselor suggests that Chris Cole would be the most convenient place for you to go, you are going to receive structured discovery training under sleep shades there. That's what they do. And it's my understanding that both facilities do that very, very well. If you want another type of training, the choice that those centers give you is, well, you can come or you cannot come. That may mean that you may have to fly halfway across the country to get the training using another style of rehabilitation. And I'll turn it back to Doug, who I think will make a few more comments and then bring Mark up.
Thanks, Michael. excuse me. So I don't have anything to add. And Michael did a great job, so I don't have anything to add at this point other than let's move now to what does a consumer, Michael was moving in this direction, what does a consumer who is recently going or has gone blind. What choices do they have? What is their outlook in terms of approaching the system and finding out what choices are available and then being able to act on those? And Mark Bulger is going to sort of talk from that standpoint, right, Mark?
Yeah,
Mark?
I'm behind you here. So.
Good.
Well, just find the microphone here. Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's certainly a pleasure to be here. Like Doug said, my name's Mark Bulger, and I guess I could just identify myself as a consumer. I'm legally blind, 54 years old, and my vision continues to get worse. As a consumer, when I go into a store, I don't have all the expertise of the, you know, the vehicles or the products. They're much more knowledgeable than I am, but I have the money and I have the desire to be served. So a consumer is someone that seeks products or services. In this case, blindness is to help enhance the quality of their life. And we know that public funds pay for those services, and that's not because the public just feels sorry for the blind. They do expect a return on their investment. And we know when blind people have the necessary skills and access to technology and things, they can be productive and give back to society. So that's why I think vocational rehabilitation exists. And then that being said, also, you know, for the senior population, for them to stay in their homes and not be dependent in like an assisted living thing, that's important too. So even if a person does not work, there is certainly value for a person to gain, you know, skills. So consumerism, if you were to say, what is consumerism? If you were to look up, that means choice. And we all like choices, right? Sometimes I think we have too many choices. In the old days when they made Model T's, Fords, you had one color, it was black. And for a long time that was successful. Then someone else, another company realized, hey, if we give people choices, you know, we can erode that vision. Now, Ford was the pioneer, and now they're just one of many companies, and there continues to be more. So consumers seek choice, and the work that you have choices. You need to keep up. To be a consumer, you have a responsibility. The days of just ignorance as a defense is no longer, I think that's no longer acceptable. And to be ignorant is also a choice. So we as blind people, we need to make informed choices. So we need to keep up to date on what's out there. We need to talk to other blind people. That's one of the great benefits of the consumer groups. You know, you exchange information. We need to do research, you know, whether it's talk to the service providers I always say Google it. I mean, it's amazing what you can find on Google. You need to be informed. You know, and you're going to have to, when you make decisions, you have to be prepared to live with them. My background's in industrial engineering, and we had a saying that necessity is a mother invention. And, you know, I couldn't help but listening to Mike and think that if I was a client of his, I think he would do whatever he could with his expertise to help me do that all that I can. You know, incorporating, you know, what my desires are and what his expertise is, and try to come up with a plan that would help me. And that, to me, that's what I see informed choice is all about, kind of an exchange of information. As consumers, we need to let the service providers know about ourselves. You know, we just can't go in there and say, you know, emptily feed me. You know, we like I say, ignorance is not no longer an excuse. Structured discovery is a method of rehabilitation. That's why we're here today. And I'm here to say it's a very good choice for many people. Most would agree that when we get services, it will help us enhance the quality of our life. You know, so there's no better time than right now that I know of to be blind. You know, we have access to, you know, computers and information that we never had before. So to me, that suggests that our rehabilitation services have to evolve to keep up with those opportunities to be engaged in society. We're an information-based world right now. So if we don't have access to information right now, we're going to be left behind. I don't know if you know the history of Braille, but before the six-dot system, they used to do what was called embossing, and it was very big and very cumbersome. And, they came up with the idea of Braille because it filled a need, and it was more efficient. And so I'd like to think that we continue to evolve. You know, we want to continue to be more efficient, so that's an important thing. Structured discovery is loved by some people. I would say it's hated by others. And I would say most people just don't understand it. So structured discovery is a viable choice to some, and it's a great choice. Proponents of structured discovery, what I've heard is the philosophy, or it is you need to master non-visual skills, like Michael said. Training is typically with sleep shades. And the premise is you're not able to make an informed choice until you've mastered non-visual skills. That's not to say you're going to live your life not utilizing what residual vision you have, but once you have mastered non-visual skills, you're capable to determine which methods best suit you. So my problem is I'm trying to not be redundant with what Mike said. Here's some considerations you need to do. I'm sorry. I skipped the page. Okay, considerations, we need to, is it going to attract people? I'm going to bounce back. I'm sorry. What I would say, if you're considering structured discovery, here's some things that I would say that would be, that you need to consider as a consumer. Is something that would attract you to doing it? I would say, are you up to the challenges? This is a very demanding training session. And it's not, and I think even the structured discovery proponents would say it's not for everybody. And the problem is what probably the biggest thing that doesn't appeal to people is just that not wanting to give up their usable vision during the training. And again, I say you need to become a consumer of choices. Some of the advantages of structured discovery, as I see it as a consumer, is the people that come out of it tend to be very successful. The people that come out of it tend to be very, determined. You hear the term low recidivism. People that have been trained tend not to have to go back, and those are all good things. The other side of the coin, as I see it, is it doesn't attract people, and then therefore they may not get the service if it could enhance the quality of their life. What do we do with the failures that didn't make it for whatever reason? We need to make informed decisions. Make sure that, again, you have access to choices. And I was talking about, I was an industrial engineer, and one of the things that we did, whether it was a meat packing plant or a pickle factory or whatever, there's certain things when you develop methods that I think it would apply even to training blind people. One is what is the quality of training that you want to have? Obviously, quality is always important. What's the cost of what you want to produce? Obviously, we have limited funds. How efficient do you want to be? How much time do you have? Those are all things that we need to consider. Some people that are currently in the workplace and all they need is another skill or adaptive technology. perhaps structured discovery is not for them. Maybe it's they need some low vision support to keep them in the workforce. Structured discovery, I think, is good on the other side. If someone is out of the workforce and they're in a transition, that would give them a time to retool. With the whole WIOLA thing and the emphasis on transition, the best job to have is the one you're already in. So, and a lot of people experience vision loss while they're working. So anything that we can do to keep them in the workforce, I think, is a good thing. And the mastery of non-visual skills may not be necessarily... It may be the best thing for their blind skills, but it may not be best for their mortgage payment and their kids' college funds. So we need to factor in some other things. My experience is here in Nebraska. Well, I'm not here in Nebraska, but in Nebraska we have structured discovery, and that's our only choice. And I tell people that I talk to, and I understand the value. I say it's our best choice. Because one choice is better than none. For those that, when I talk to those people that say, well, geez, that's just not something I want to do, then I encourage them to, you know, dig a little deeper. There is a process that's called CAP, C-A-P, and Bianca, could you head up here for a second? And what that is it's for people that don't like the choices, and they want to have some choices. So I asked Bianca to come up here, and I touched base with her yesterday, and I figured I had liberties to do this because... But Bianca, are you coming? Okay. Could you just tell them what you do as CAP?
Sure. I guess this is why I rambled on so much in my introduction. So CAP stands for, or CAP stands for the Client Assistance Program. And that's actually a grant that the PNAs across the country receive. There are a few states that the CAP program is... The Protection and Advocacy Agency. Sorry about that. In my world, we're all acronyms. And every state definitely does have a protection and advocacy organization. So Tennessee's is called Disability Rights Tennessee, where I work. Some states also have the disability rights, you know, and then their state name. It could be different in your state. But every state definitely does have a CAP program. And what that is... it's designed to make sure that the rights of clients of the vocational rehabilitation system are being met throughout their process. That can start at the eligibility determination. It can, be anything from helping with the due process. Say someone wants to appeal a decision, a client can appeal the priority category they are put in, which puts them in basically a category system for receiving services and the most services. Well, so how this plays into structured discovery, I've found in my work is one of the rights that a client has in their vocational rehab experience is to choose the provider of services they receive. And if a state is one in which structured discovery is offered, but that there is also another option, even if it's not within their state, so let's say it's a state that does have both and they want to go to a facility that is structured discovery and they're trying to teach them or to have them go to one of the more traditional teaching approaches. They can contact the client assistance program and we would definitely advocate for them to be able to choose to go to a structured discovery center. It works the same way in the inverse. So the harder thing is what I was starting to say, which is if someone wants to is really determined not to go to structured discovery and they want to go out of state to receive other services, then that's the VR also program also has a right to have a preference for in-state services, and so that's going to be a little bigger hurdle. But the option is still out there, and that's something that I help with, provide legal oversight for. But what it comes down to is, like both of these gentlemen have said, is just a matter of choice, your informed choice. That is a term used widely in my work, in the vocational rehab context. It's choice in a lot of things, including your employment outcome through VR, but also in the services as they're being provided for you to meet that goal. So, you know, it all just comes down to self-advocacy and knowing your VR clients are definitely supposed to be told about the CAP program. I don't know that they always are, but again, some of that knowledge, you know, and just being able to rely on my services and the services of the CAP program in your state to try to make sure that you get the services that you want. So that's how I can play.
Well,
all right, good deal.
Thank you. And I guess this is a good example of being a consumer. I had a choice to bring her up here and speak for me because there's no way that we can know it all. That's why we surround ourselves with the best possible information. And I see that the role of the consumer groups is to help not only our members, yes, but we need to help blind people have the choices available so that they can achieve all that they can achieve. And to some extent, the consumer has to determine what their goals are. I can't tell you as another blind person what your goals are, but I can tell you there's probably limited funds, and you know it's not a free for all. So your choices do come with some ramifications. And I know Dr. Van Zandt's here. I'm amazed what she does with limited resources she has, but we only have so many dollars, so it's a real balancing act. And since I'm a consumer and speaking, would you like to provide any clarification, Dr. Van Zandt?
I would add a little bit. Can everybody hear me?
Why don't you come up here?
Come up to the mic because we've got ACB radio too.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
But, you know, to me, this is all about getting good information. And, you know, we've got a valuable resource here. So thank you, Dr. Van Zandt.
Thank you. What I would add is that the residential training is not the only option. And the example of a person who I think you said the best job is the one you've already got, I love that saying. That individual would actually be better served, or could be better served, not to attend a full training center, but to get more of what we call field services, where they have, whether it's a teacher or a counselor comes to their workplace or works with them in their off hours to get the skills, the specific skills they need. Let's say they sound like your example, Mark, was they, you know, needed just those specific skills related to their job so they could keep that job.
Absolutely.
And that is best provided in the field setting instead of a 8-to-5, you know, training setting. So I would just add that even a state like Nebraska, where, yes, our training center is structured discovery, it is immersion training, we also have field services throughout the state that can provide that alternative, if you like. It can also be structured discovery in the setting, but it also can be more focus on low vision. So that is definitely an option.
Thank you. And I'll finish this up in a minute, Doug. But we will. I'll summarize this here. But there's no magic answers as consumers. I don't doubt any service provider here. They're not in it for the money. You care about the blind. We can agree to disagree, but we can agree that we want what's best for the people. And that's ACB, NFB. When we remember we're for the people and not against them, we're gonna accomplish some things. So thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. That was a good presentation. I'm going to sort of step into my advocacy role because I am the chair of the Rehab Issues Task Force for the American Council of the Blind. And I do live in Virginia, where the residential center is run by someone who has come through the structured discovery system, and it's mostly structured discovery. But I'm going to say that as a consumer and as an advocate, I'm going to differ a little bit from what Mark was saying. First of all, at the consumer level, yes, you have to become an informed consumer. But from whom do you get that information when you go blind? You know, remember people are in the room are visually impaired or blind, when that happened, I can speak from experience. I have retinitis pigmentosa, so I actually came in too late to the system because I had already quit, already gone on SSDI before I came into the rehab system. But the point being that when you're confronted with not being able to do what you used to do, you also don't know where to go, and you also don't know what questions to ask, because you just, you know, it's a lot to confront. So I say that we as a consumer organization, but also most of you out there are professionals in the system, you do have an obligation to help people see what is available and what options there are. I've been on numerous conversations where people have said that the people that they were working with who were advocates of structured discovery didn't give options. It was my way or the highway. And I think that's a disservice to consumers. So I also think that in America, we are a democracy. We we are equal rights, civil rights of every individual. And I think that there is an obligation to serve everyone, not just the ones who will go lockstep with the program. I've had people, I've had people come to me and they said, "Well, look, I can't do cooking under eye shades. It scares me too much." And they were told, "Well, fine, but you're not going to be part of the group, or you're not going to take part in the culminating activity with the rest of the group." And I think that's disservice to people. So I think there needs to be self-advocacy by the consumer. I also think there also needs to be some understanding and compassion on the side of the professionals for the individualized plan for rehabilitation. That's another keystone of the law, an individualized plan. Not one that fits most people's system or some people's system. So I think on the other side, we need to also address people who don't fit into the system. That's why 70% of people who are blind are still unemployed, because perhaps part of it is that I also hear of counselors who will not send people to a structured discovery residential program.
Doug?
Yes.
When you finish there, I'd like to share something with the group, if I may. Doug Boone from Oklahoma.
Okay. So that is, I'm not saying either one of the system, any system is perfect. Obviously, we're all far from perfect, aren't we? Because it wouldn't be 70% unemployment if we were doing a better job. But I think there are considerations that need to be made, and I think that ACB affiliates and ACB chapters can provide some useful coaching to people who are about to enter the system, are going through the system, and are having trouble. And we've tried to do that with, Michael mentioned the white paper on informed choice that is on the website. I wrote a series of articles for the Braille Forum last year, not this year, but last year in 2004. Most of them were 2014, talking about the fundamentals of entering the system and what can you expect, what services are available, but also the grievance procedure. So, and that's Mark and Bianca were talking about the grievance procedure when it's not going your way. But I've been successful in talking to the Virginia system when people came to me with specific examples And, you know, for example, one of the things is that people who have guide dogs are not welcome to bring their guide dogs, for the most part, to structured discovery, rehabilitation centers. So, but that's detrimental to the guide dog and to the, you know, the relationship that the consumer has with their guide dog. So, there are obligations that the licensed state agency has to all of the consumers, and I think we also need to be cognizant that we can push back a little bit and try to make change so that all of consumers are being serviced in the way that will be most successful for them.
May I try to address that, Doug?
Hold on just a second, because Doug Boone also asked for the floor, so I'm trying to decide how to...
I'm just saying that you're focused on professionals. It appears to me that this program is set up for professionals who already have the training and the opinions. I'm coming here as a consumer advocate. I don't have the training or the opinions, and I would like to hear some of the answers to some of the... As put forth in the description of this seminar.
All right, to repeat the question for people, since we don't have the microphone available to us, to repeat the question, Terry Lynn was asking for more details about what structured discovery already is, what it is, and how it differs from the traditional, because she feels like we've talked in generalities but would like more specifics. Am I characterizing that correctly?
And also that this program seems to have been...
We now have the mic.
Ah.
That this program seems to have been focused for professionals, but I'm here as an advocate for consumers in my state, and I still don't feel that I have any answers, because it's sort of been presented as, you all know what structured discovery is and is it good or bad. Well, I still don't know what structured discovery even is.
Okay.
Okay.
Michael, would you like
to take a stab at that, if I might? Terry, structured discovery, as Doug explained at the first of the session, is the concept that you're going to learn by figuring things out more on your own, and what the instructor or the individual who is providing the rehabilitation must do is give you a safe and positive structure in which you can learn for yourself. And the best way I can explain the difference would be to explain a couple of different methodologies in orientation and mobility that I might use depending on the individual. If I have an individual who is very much step-oriented in their thinking, they want to memorize steps, but they are not creative in learning for themselves. And let's say this person is a newly totally blind person. I might very well give them the basics in cane skills so they can be safe, for example, walking their home block. And then ask them to stop at the corner, survey the corner, and tell me all of the items that are on the corner that they might know or use for landmarks in other situations. And expect them to figure those things out. Where the person who does not think that way, does not work that way well, may be saying to me, Don't make me fumble around on the corner and figure this stuff out. I want to know the route. I want to go back to work. You tell me how to get down to the bus stop, get on the bus, and get the transfer made, and I'll go back to work. Now do it. Mm-hmm. And for that person, I'm going to say, okay, we're going to teach you the basic cane skills. We're going to teach you to listen to traffic, to cross the streets that you're asking to cross, and that will transfer certainly to other environmental situations. Then we're going to go landmark to landmark. We're going to figure out routes because that's what you're asking for. And I feel very fortunate in my current teaching situation that I do have the flexibility to make those choices. Is that addressing a little bit more what you were after in terms of some of the difference in approaches?
Yes, that does help me somewhat. Thank you.
And could I add one thing, Michael?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I've come to know, realizing the blind field, you know, while we all have a visual impairment, there are differences. And in defense of the presentation, and you brought up a very good point, I wish I would have rethought that a little bit more. The group that's providing this discussion, we're low vision, and it's the people that have vision that are struggling with do I wear the sleep shades or not. So I apologize that we didn't touch base with that better. So thank you.
I did have a couple of things that, and I think Doug's about ready to go to questions. Am I correct on that? Mr. Boone.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'll bring this over to you, Mr. Boone.
Oh, thank you.
Mr. Boone has the floor now.
Just a bit of information to follow up on Mark and Bianca, something that might help everyone across the nation. This last year, we developed a cartridge that's to be used in the Library of Congress player. And on that cartridge is some significant information. The Office of Disability Concern, what it does, how to contact them is listed there. The Client Assistance Program is listed there, what it does. The library, how you can access books. We have the listing of both consumer organizations and the way that they describe themselves and how to get in touch with them, as well as the 5 training centers that we contract with, so that we're putting the information on this cartridge, and it's in the hands of the consumer. It's up to them to follow up and contact the various training centers if they feel that they're interested in them. And each of the training centers provide the information as they want themselves described. This has gone a long way of taking away a lot of the extra work of our counselors, but it's also providing some direct information and making sure that no one is inadvertently forgetting to mention an option. So we're empowering people in that matter. And on top of it, we issue the Library of Congress player to them on that day. We're not just bureaucrats. We've actually changed their life on the first meeting with a counselor. So I think it's a win-win, and just want to suggest that as an option.
Thank you, sir.
Could I just add, piggyback on that? You know, since we're about sharing information, were there any consumers involved when you put that information together, or was it more from a service provider perspective?
So, you know, I'm asking because information is important.
Yeah, what we did was compile it within our office. We actually put out information requests. We didn't get much back. This is what we've come up with. We contacted the 2 consumer organizations so that they gave us the information as they wanted it. Same way with the training centers. We have Affiliated Blind, and we contract with Affiliated Blind in Louisiana. Those things can be changed. We're going to change them once a year. We're not going to have it, you know, dribbling in all year long, but we do have it available so we can change it. Eventually, it's going to be available on a CD as well as a thumb drive and hopefully on our internet in the future.
Okay, can we hold that for just a few minutes? We still got half an hour here, and now I have about 25 minutes, so we go to 2:30. Well, hold on. All right.
So go ahead.
I'm coming back to you, Sarita. You want to get that on the microphone? Don't just leave out
the numbers. That's good. Thank you. My question is, I'm very familiar with the client assistance program, having been an employer, and known that it can be detrimental when a person doesn't have that information. So I'm happy to hear about this cartridge and so forth. But my question is there anyone in this room who has gone through the system that has been described by the panelists up front? who has been trained under Sleep Shade and can give their perspective of, one, did it work for them? Two, what made them choose that? Or was it cat put upon them that this is what we want you to do? What was that experience? Because I'm hearing the one-side presentation by the folks up front, but I'd like to know if there's anyone in the audience that's been through that system.
Look, can I?
I would like to respond to Sarita and say that as someone who has taught in a structured discovery environment, and before I ever started doing that by choice, yes, I have been to a structured discovery facility. I didn't spend as long there as people who are just beginning rehab would, but I was under Sleep Shades for 10, 12 hours a day for a period of several weeks. And as a person who had been using a lot of low vision skills over many, many years and had learned to use them very well, I found it to be very, very confidence building and very enlightening. I found it to be a totally positive experience. As someone who has worked with people who didn't have my background when they went through that and who didn't understand about the different types of information they could have or different training they could have, one thing I'm very pleased about my current employment situation is I work with a facility that does emphasize low vision, but they certainly make me available. They have a Braille teacher who is available on a part-time basis as people need it. And we are able to assist people who come and say, well, I was a rehab failure. I went through that structured discovery stuff, and I just couldn't handle it. It was too scary. It was too frightening for me emotionally. I didn't feel I got the support. Everybody else was better at it than I was when I got there. Those are people who have seemingly been rejected by the structured discovery-only system, perhaps because of their own issues, but they had been rejected, and we were able to bring them back out of that. That's not to take away from the values of structured discovery. And very quickly, this goes a little past what Sarita was asking, but I think I can certainly present myself as someone who's been through both types of training. Is there anybody in the audience who's been through the training structured discovery? All right, I'm looking at it. Here's a lady who... There you are.
In response to your question, I went through the Iowa Department for the Blind Structured Discovery Program as a staff member prior to working at the department. I'm sorry?
Hold the microphone closer.
Okay. I went through the program at the Iowa Department for the Blind under Sleep Shades. And at that point, I had some usable vision also. And I found structured discovery to be very beneficial to me as far as confidence building, because one thing that I knew and always... One thing that I questioned was, did I need sight to do a particular job? And I was thinking of limiting my occupations to only things that I could see. But once I realized how capable I could be without vision, my horizons and job opportunities expanded tremendously, because I felt like there was a lot more that I could do. Now, as far as when I worked in the center, I know, and I don't understand how, I mean, you guys use the term rejected by structured discovery systems. I take offense to that. I believe that there are people who have some difficulty dealing with being blind, who aren't ready necessarily to enter that kind of program at the time. And a lot of it is frightening in the beginning, because you're learning a whole lot of new skills under total blindness, but you're maybe more afraid of being blind than what you're doing. And the focus is, you know, on your attitude and stuff like that. I also know that given a choice to a newly blinded individual, if they looked at the pedagogical program versus structured discovery, even informed choice, more than likely they would choose the pedagogical program because it's a hell of a lot easier and they don't have to deal with the fear factor or the factor of, you know, being blind to, you know, faith, you know, right in their face because they don't want to deal with it at that point.
Well, I take a little bit of issue with that characterization, but go
right ahead. But I mean,
so here's the thing for me. I thought she was, sorry.
No, I'm not finished. But what I have seen from students in our program, in the program at the Department for the Blind, and I'm familiar with those in Nebraska and other states, people leave feeling good about themselves, like they can conquer the world. And to that end, you know, when they came in, they were scared. But here's the thing. We do not put people out in the middle of the city of Des Moines, for instance, and say, find your way back today. You know, we teach people to travel and take them out, you know, in safe environments. And we make sure that they can travel safely before they go on to doing more and more difficult activities under sleep shades. When somebody is there telling you what you need to do and giving you the answers all the time, you really can become dependent on that. And that is a difficult problem for a lot of people who are in the pedagogical program. And I have seen that from upstate New York and, you know, let's say up in Massachusetts, where they'll have huge caseloads of people who they only teach route travel to, you know, specific routes, but then they have to go back and teach them another route when, in fact, for instance, in travel in Nebraska or wherever is using the structured discovery method, you teach people how to travel. And when you learn how to travel, you can travel wherever you want to go. And you don't have to have somebody teach you a particular route, because you learn how to discover and you learn how to, well, you actually gain enough confidence so you know how to explore. And so if you get lost, you don't panic and you start trying to figure things out. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I do know that a lot of our people have gone to work and a lot of good-paying jobs, and I also know, let's see, there's a 70% unemployment rate among blind people. Probably the most of the blind people who have the 30% of those jobs are probably totally blind, and they have skills of blindness. If you want to learn a skill of blindness, you can't really learn it if you can see, because you're going to be depending on your sight. And so you're not going to learn confidence in it either. So there you go.
Thank you.
Did you have something, Doug, on?
I did have something. I did my O&M training under sleep shades. So I did not go to a residential program when I was in rehab, but I did do it under sleep shade because I'm an adventurous kind of guy, and I'm willing to do that. And my own O&M instructor decided that it was appropriate for me to do that. And I'm losing my vision, so it's not a stable condition. So the decision I made was that, okay, I'm going to be worse off a few years from now than I am now. So I might as well go for it and find out how to do it, you know, the whole nine yards. But that's me. That's using my strength. You know, what are the five or six words? Strengths, capabilities, abilities, concerns, interests, and informed choice. So those were my capabilities, abilities, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Other people do not have that, and we need to reach them where they are. And so Michael teaches that guy a fixed route, and maybe he has to go back and teach him another fixed route down the road sometime. But that's that guy's. That's not how I want to live my life, but that's how he wants to live his life.
Exactly. And I, by the way, as a comms, certainly give people the choice that Doug just mentioned of learning their O&M under blindfold. I have worked under blindfold. I am very comfortable teaching someone who is working under blindfold, whether they are using structured discovery learning techniques or whether they're using what the structured discovery advocates at least call more pedagogical techniques. I think it's my obligation as the instructor to be flexible enough to adapt to what they are saying is going to work the best for them. And some people say, well, I want to try both and see which is going to work for me, because I don't know. And that's what's called informed choice. It's getting the information that's necessary. And I think that the big controversy over structured discovery, which certainly exists within ACB because we have put informed choice above and beyond everything else, is to make certain that people have the opportunity to make that decision. Very quickly, I, in the last year, had two attorneys that were both on my clientele, or worked with my agency anyway. I work for a private not-for-profit. It's an NIV facility. We also have a low vision clinic. We have, as I said, assistive technology. We have a Braille instructor who works on a part-time basis. We have a PT, so we can work with multiply disabled blind, and they have a couple of CLVTs for the low vision therapies. They have me. One of the attorneys I worked with was a young lady who was in her 30s. She lost her vision from 20/20 vision, both eyes, to no light perception over a period of about 15 hours. And she was very devastated by that. There was no issue about whether wearing sleep shades or not was a good idea. But she had no idea how she wanted to learn to get back to work as an attorney. Our Braille instructor started working with her on Braille because obviously that's a useful skill for an attorney to have who doesn't see. I started working with her on absolute skills, whether you apply them using structured discovery or more pedagogical methods. Yes, I taught some routes landmark to landmark, but in the period of time working with her 1 to 2 times a week, and some weeks not at all because she was trying her skills and traveling on her own, which is to her credit, she got to where she could leave her home at the eastern edge of Wichita, Kansas, take 3 different buses, do transfers, cross streets, and come to see me at my office completely independently. That was pretty good. She went along well on her Braille. But to get the comprehensive services that she felt she needed to return to work as an attorney, she is now studying at the Colorado NFB Center using structured discovery techniques. And she wrote back to my colleague who teaches Braille and me, you know, I don't think I could have made it through this program if I hadn't have been prepared for this level of immersion by what you guys gave me first. And that's part of that preparation that I believe Pearl Van Zandt was talking about, where the persons are ready. But she did say, had I not had that, I might have washed out of this and just decided I couldn't do anything and gone home. On the other hand, we had an attorney who, due to macular degeneration, he was a little older, in his 50s or 60s, I believe, still wanted to practice, had a very active law practice. And his problem was he was uncomfortable walking in downtown to get to his office, to get around the places he needed to go, and he couldn't read his briefs. We gave him some cane travel and a CCTV, and a portable CCTV. He's back practicing, and that's one of those situations where the wisest thing to do was save the job he had. Going to a center and being immersed in structured discovery teaching was not what he needed. He needed to go back to work. So those two choices at those two extremes, I think, is what we're talking about. And
Mark, yeah, just from a consumer standpoint, and I've talked to even Pearl about this, the best advertisement for structured discovery is success stories. And like our orientation and mobility instructor is going around to different consumer groups and agencies, and she's bringing success stories along with them. And, you know, who doesn't want to be a success story? We want to be careful that if you're not a success, labeling someone as fearful or a failure, because I'd like everybody to be able to go to Harvard or MIT. They would be very successful. Not everybody's equipped to that for that. So we need to realize where people are at and continue to market structured discovery, because it does have a very important niche, and especially in the orientation center environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. This will be the last one.
It's going to have to be the last comment.
Yeah, it's all very simple, really, because what you're really talking about is this whole process of treatment planning in terms of helping the person, in other words, doing the informed choice as to what somebody really wants as part of their treatment plan. And based on that plan, it's going to be a program that person is very much involved with, whereas before, the counselor met with the person and said, you got to do A, B, and C in order to get to D.
Thank you. And I guess we need to say, since it's 2:30, thank you everyone for coming and participating. And I hope you all got something out of this. Did you have any closing comments, Doug or Mark?
No, I don't. Thank you very much. It was a very lively discussion. I appreciate your participation, and thank you very much.